Welcome to Little Things Are Big Things Education with
K-Dub.
T. Friedman. We want to welcome you to a conversation about how valuable relationship building is in our classroom.
We will cover topics like connection activities, how relationships can be used to encourage student growth, and sharing our favorite memories from teaching. Everything we have accomplished in our classrooms goes back to the relationships we build with our students and is totally replicable. Feel free to use, share, and adapt everything we provide here.
Yeah, and if you would like to go even deeper, I'd like to join us with our live monthly group. This is where we're going to go live with you every single month and dive into an hour-long podcast with the latest research and tools available for you to use in your classroom and to connect with your students.
Now, without further ado, let's get on this week's episode.
All right, welcome. This is our first episode with you, and we're so excited to have you. So we're going to give a quick bio of kind of who we are, so you know our background just a bit. My name's Steve Freeberg. My students and my athletes call me T Free, so that's what I'm going to be here. And I've been teaching off and on for about, I guess, 8 years now. About this is my 6th year full time in the classroom. I've also done a couple of years doing social emotional learning workshops all across the country. Continue to teach and coach and tutor and all sorts of stuff. High school math is where I'm at currently in Bowling Green, Kentucky.
And I am David Kilpatrick White, which is really too long. My wife and I did not plan that out very well, and we decided to hyphenate. So my students and my athletes call me K-Dub, and I've been teaching for 10 years, and I realized the other day that this is about was going to be going into my 15th year of coaching before the pandemic hit. Or sorry, my 20th year of coaching. That's what it was blowing me away. Started when I was 15. So I'm a social studies teacher, and currently I am at a high school in Portland that is going through a renaming process because it was named after a person with a racist past. So I won't give the name of the high school right now because we're in limbo. But much like the Washington football team, we're just the high school in Southwest Portland. So that's where I'm coming from, and that's my experience. So we're going to start each episode with an example of a connection activity that we've used or that we continue to use in our classes. Usually how we'll do this is that we'll basically just do the activity like we would with the class and model it. And then as we're going through it or afterwards, we'll talk through some kind of like the tips for success to how we put it together and the little things that we do that the kids don't see in order to make the activity successful. Tim's going to do the first one for us with an activity that he does at the beginning of every school year. Take it away, Tim.
So this is one of my favorites to start the school year. I think you could use it kind of whenever, but that's kind of where I like to plug it in. And it's going to be called Three Truths and a Lie. And some of you have probably played this before. In fact, a lot of what we're going to probably teach and share and talk about is, not new material, but we're hoping to bring you some nuggets or, kind of refresh you on some of the stuff that you're like, oh yeah, I forgot about that. That was kind of cool. So three truths and a lie. Really, it's that simple. You're gonna give three statements that are true, one statement that is a lie or a stretch of the truth. And I use this as a way to share my personal background and share a piece of my story so that the kids start to see where I'm coming from, and then they start to feel comfortable to open up and share kind of their backgrounds eventually as well. So when I'm doing this, a couple things that I've thought through is when I build them, I like to do something that is like fun, exciting, that I can connect with the kids. Something that's like super like outlandish, almost like, oh my gosh, like there's no way that's possibly true. But that turns into kind of a fun story to share. And then usually for me, my lie is a stretch of the truth or something funny. And so here are the ones I use this school year. That worked pretty well for me. The first one is I played Division I college football. My second statement is I fell off of a 40-foot cliff. That's going to be my big hook. That'll be a fun one. My third one here is I put up, I love pickles more than life itself. And then my last one is I have fostered 12 dogs and I currently own four of them that are like my permanent dogs. So I put those up, and then there's, depending on the use of technology and where we're at, there's a couple different ways I'll survey the field to kind of get the responses back. If it was this school year, for example, and we're in NTI and we're on Google Meet like we are with you actually right now, I would use the polling feature and let the students kind of cast their votes into their polls, and then I would show the poll and go from there. If it's in the classroom, either I can use like Pear Deck and have my students log in with their Chromebooks and try to do something there, or just old school fashion, raise your hand, right? So we're gonna do that kind of right now. Just take a quick moment, think which one you think are the truths, which ones you think are the lie. Again, real quick, in no particular order, I played Division One football, I fell off a 40-foot cliff, I love pickles more than life itself, and I have fostered 12 dogs and currently own four. So then I'll go through the list. I'm like, all right, how many of you think that I played Division One football? And I'm a pretty big dude, and people are like, ah, that seems believable. So they, I get a handful of people. They're like, yeah, that seems true. I'm like, you're right. I played Division One football over at Washington State. I was a walk-on, and actually got a moment to play against Idaho when we were up 56-7. That was my moment of fame, and so it's usually one of my spots where I can kind of connect, especially with some of the athletes. It's just more like my natural market because I coach as well as I played sports, so I kind of connect there for a quick bit. Then I come back to my next one, and I'm like, hey, how many of you think it's true that I fell off a 40-foot cliff? And usually, this one, people are starting to like, how is he alive if he fell off a 40-foot cliff? I'll get a couple that I put them up, and I'm like, you know what? Let's go somewhere else where we get a little more unanimous votes. I'm like, how many of you think I love pickles? And usually, I get a group of people that are like the pickle advocates, right? They love pickles, and they're like, oh, I love pickles too. This is amazing. So we run with pickles for a bit, and I'm like, here's the thing. It's a lie. I hate pickles. In fact, I'll usually share a story about how much I hate pickles, and it involves my buddy K-Dub here. We were hanging out, and we went to a pita pit, and I was grabbing tables, and Dave, your pita pit for you. I was like, perfect. He's like, hey, do you like jalapenos? I was like, jalapenos are fine. Go for it. He goes, yo, Tim, you don't like pickles, right? I was like, no, hate pickles. He looks at the dude, and he goes, put one pickle in. Comes back to the table, we're eating. I'm like, man, there's a lot of jalapenos in this thing. My face is like on fire, but I'm like, it's pretty good. No joke. Like halfway through the pita, I take a bite and I pause. And then I pull out one pickle. And he's like, how? How did you even find that pickle? Oh, yeah, I
I
couldn't
still
do it.
think
I
you
don't know.
overheard me. That's my story. I'm sticking to it. I think you
I
overheard
couldn't
me.
do it. I knew it was somewhere deep in there. So, anyways, usually that's kind of a funny story, and we play off because the students will either be like, "Yeah, I also like hate pickles," or they can relate to something that like they would despise that much, whatever it is on their plate of food that they had to eat as a kid that they're like, "I couldn't stand it." So, usually I'll have some fun with that and bounce around with some of the student responses, and then I'll go into at this point they know the lie, right? So I'll kind of finish out the other ones. They know they're both true, and I'm like, "Yep." I've fostered 12 dogs. I worked with a golden retriever rescue in Nashville, and we currently have two golden retrievers and two yellow labs. House is full of dog love. If you ever need a smile, come on over to my house. It's full of joy, right? So, for that, and I always find some dog lovers, animal lovers in general, and we play with that for a bit and have some fun. And then it comes down to the inevitable. Like somebody's like, wait, so you actually fell off a 40-foot cliff? I'm like, yeah. Let me tell you this story. I was like, I was probably your age because I just turned 16, and this is another great story that I have with my buddy K-Dub here. It was the first parents had given us permission to go camping by ourselves, no adult supervision. Like, just got my driver's license. There's six of us, I think, right? And guys, we get dumber by the numbers when we get in groups, right?
Yeah, I mean, bunch of 16-year-old teenage boys, not great. I mean, there's not even, here's how dumb teenage boys can be. The story that Tim's going to tell you, there's no alcohol involved in the story.
None, none whatsoever. This was just pure boy right here.
Just, yeah, pure
So,
dumb boy.
Yeah, like a masculine energy of like, I need to one up my buddy and do something dumber than he did. So, like, so we get up and we go camping and we're in Washington State over at Deception Pass. So some of the PNW, you probably know exactly what I'm talking about. The cliffs that everyone says do not climb them, which was the one rule my parents gave me as I walked out the door. So yeah, no problem. We won't climb the cliffs. As soon as we get there, we're like, what do you guys want to do? Like, so climb rocks. So we went and we climbed some rocks, climbed some trees. And then all of a sudden we're like, dude, see that cliff? It's not even that big. And there's water underneath it. Let's climb that. And so it was, I don't know, 20, 30 feet tops. We climbed it, had success. So now we've got a little bit of confidence to go with our stupidity. And so it's not like, I don't know, it had to have been like a 50-foot cliff. And we're like, let's go climb that. And Dave's like, you guys are morons. I'm not climbing it. So one of our other buddies, Jason, he and I start scaling this thing. No harness, like shorts, tennis shoes, no shirt even. We're climbing up like 45, 50 feet in the air. We're almost back to the trail and one of the rocks I'm holding on to breaks loose. And like, I start sliding and I'm like, oh no, right? Like, and I remember there was like a rock base. So I had to jump and clear it. So I took like one step and jumped. I'm like falling like a cartoon character out of the sky. And Dave's like, bam, I hit the ground. And I remember Dave tells me this. He goes, the first thing that came to my mind was, oh my gosh, Tim's dead. We're never going camping again. Anyways, that's usually that like wow story that like people are like, holy, wait, but you actually lived? I'm like, yeah, like 30 seconds later, 10 seconds later, whatever it was, I like came back to consciousness and start flailing in the water. And like, we literally got up and I walked away with nothing more than a bruise, like bruised ribs and scratches down my back from sliding.
Yeah. I mean, that literally the biggest consequence. I still can't believe that. I can picture the scratches on your back afterwards. And I feel like we had 2 days or something like that pretty quickly thereafter. And you were kind of dealing with that at practice, but that was pretty much it.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, we ran back to our campsite as fast as we could, cause we didn't want to get caught by the state like park rangers. Cause we thought they were going to tell our parents.
Yeah.
So we got back to the campsite and there was an ambulance waiting for me. I was like, oh no. And they're like, no, we're not going to tell your parents. We just want to make sure you're okay. Like, you're alive. Like, people fall off this and die all the time. I was like, whew. So
I totally forgot about the ambulance waiting for us.
Yes. The couple gauze packs cleaned me up and let me be a dumb boy with the rest of the guys again.
That's hilarious. Thanks for sharing that. That's funny. You're welcome.
So that's one of my things I enjoy starting with. So there's lots of variations you can play off of it. In fact, some of my other fellow math teachers and I, we used it as warm-ups later and actually put like content into it. So like, we'll put 4 graphs up on the screen and 3 of them will be linear functions and 1 will be non-linear or something. It will be like 3 truths and a lie. these are all linear functions. And like, the students will then like identify the non-linear function and kind of use that same 3 truths and a lie piece to it.
That's add cool. Some content. So as I'm listening to you talk about this connection activity, one of the things that I wonder about is why is it that you start the year with this particular activity? What's your thought process on using this day one?
Right. Again, like I said, you can probably use it other places, but the reason why I'm very intentional about doing it literally day one, like the moment you meet me, is one, I want that first day to be something that like adds a bit of a shock value so that one, the kids are like excited to be at school. 2, it's not the same old boring like syllabus, rules, what we're going to learn, that kind of stuff. Like, yeah, I'll probably mix in a little bit of math on day one, but honestly, day one's all about connections. And for me, like, not much more connecting than telling crazy stories. Plus, I'm a firm believer that stories is the way that we connect. You know, and I think as a history teacher, you probably see this too, right? Like, that was how history was passed along, is via story. So I love the spoken story. I think there's an art form to it, and it's definitely something where me being vulnerable and sharing like a part of me allows the students to see that and start sharing a piece of them pretty early also.
Yeah, I think there's 2 things that I that when you're talking that I notice. And so it sounds like reason number one is just that if you're going to be about connections and relationships, it's a good idea to start with that, right? Like, don't start with something that's not what is most important to you. And then that idea of storytelling and how human it can be and how what a great way it is to connect, because ultimately that's how humans connect, right? As we tell stories, from as simple as I get home back before the pandemic and my wife asked me, how was your day, right? That's me telling the story of how my day went, or right. me asking her about the story of her day, or moments like this where you and I in a different setting or now via Zoom are just like telling old stories that we shared together and or talking about things that we've done since the last time we've seen each other, right? So yeah, storytelling is like the that's like the ultimate in connecting. So that makes a lot of sense that you, if you want something to be important, you do it first, and that the best way to connect is by telling a story.
Right, 100%.
One of the other things that I wonder about when you talk about this is, you know, whether you've been at a school for multiple years or maybe just over the course of the day, right? You know, kids talk, right? And these are some funny stories. do you ever have to vary or how often do you vary the three truths and a lie that you pick out?
Depending on the year, depending on in like what classes I'm teaching, like if there's like a lot of overlap, like I'm only sophomores or something one year, a lot of times they start talking to your buddies, especially at like lunch or whatever. But I don't make a big deal about it. Like I usually just let the kids kind of plug their answers in, and we still get to it, because even if they know the story's coming, right? Like there's that anticipation of like he's gonna tell the story. Like I know the answer, but I want to hear the story. And so I don't worry about it too much. I do later in the school year when we do, like if I'm teaching algebra one or algebra two, like we'll do like exponential growth, and we'll talk about like how rumor spreading or like storytelling, right? Like, hey, did you hear about, you know, Friedman falling off of a cliff? Like, yeah, like 30 people in class heard it, and then they told two people who told two people who told two people, and all of a sudden like the whole 1800 kids on campus all of a sudden know by fourth period, and we talk about how fast things can spread. So
yeah, that seems like it would come in handy as a lesson when you're doing like an anti-bullying campaign or something like that. And one of the things that I'm going to pat you on the back, just because I know you, is that I think one of the things that makes you effective as a math teacher, and we'll talk about this later on, is how you give real world examples of how math impacts our daily lives. Because I never would have thought about exponential growth as it relates to rumor mongering if it wasn't for you, right? Because I hate math, right? So I am one of those kids that you talk about that avoids math at all costs. And right. you do a really good job of making it obvious, like, hey, math comes into play when we're talking about our anti-bullying campaign, because you could do this one thing and now everybody knows about it. So
right, and how fast you can crush it, so you can flatten out that curve, kind of like mm-hmm. Yeah. So
then the other thing that when you and I were talking about this when we were getting ready, I had asked you if you ever have the students participate in this, because I have a colleague that does a similar activity, Frank Matthews at the school that I teach at, give him a quick shout out. But he has the kids also over the course of the first few weeks of the school year, then create their own and share it as like a get to know you activity for the whole school. Do you do something similar with your three truths and a lie?
I don't at the current moment, but you share. Like I think that would be a great way to allow the students to connect with each other. In fact, I think you were talking about your teacher friend. He actually has them build like a Kahoot or something even.
Yeah.
Like that's pretty cool. And so you can definitely have some fun with that. Like I said, for me and my department, we have spun the more into actually using the content, because the students still think it's kind of fun that way. And sometimes it's tricky. We'll be like X equals, you know, 3 or whatever, and put like 4 different equations up. So we do it more that way, but I do some different activities to have the students connect with each other and share a piece of them with me so I can learn more about them. But I think that's a brilliant way to use it, is how the students do the same thing.
Cool. Any other just like kind of like little secrets to how you are able to make this work in terms of like why you chose each of the stories that you chose? I know you kind of talked about that a little bit, but anything else just for like if someone wanted to do this tomorrow in class, things that they should keep in mind?
If you were to do this tomorrow, number one, have fun. Like if you're having a good time with it, like the energy you attach to it is contagious. And we know this about anything we do, right? But if I come in, I'm like, hey, we're doing three truths and a lie. I bet you can't guess it. You know, and I'm like kind of like a, I don't know, whatever like weird energy I put about it. Like it's going to be a weird activity. But if I come in, I'm like, yeah, this is going to be like, you're not even going to believe it. And even if you don't think you believe it, I'm still going to tell you, and you still won't believe it. And so, outrageous story. It's totally fine too. Like you don't, this is a funny one, like for me, because I am an outrageous human being. Like let's just be real about that. Like people are like, do what you do. And I'm like, you don't have to do what I do. Like be you, be authentic. And be like, no, like, here's my truth and my lie. And like, maybe your truth that you're going to dive deeper is like how much you'd like love your brothers or your sisters or your family or whatever it is. Right. Like every once in a while, like I'll put up like something like I'm a total mama's boy or something. Right. And like, I'll be like how many, come on, where's my mama boys at? Like, you know, you love your mama. Like where's my love mom, love dad. Right. And we'll go into more of a heartfelt space for a bit. And like, I'm more naturally jokey, but like dipping into the heart and then coming back to laughter is a really good thing because we're subconsciously taught not to go there. Right. So I think it's good to model like that vulnerability, that honesty, that realness. So it doesn't have to be an outlandish story, especially if you don't have one. Don't make one up. Just be real.
Yeah. Don't include a lie in your three truths. That's not good. All right. Well, in that case, I think it's time to go ahead and move on to our big idea for this week, which is really the foundation of the whole podcast, how relationships are valuable. And when we were talking about this, I was reminded of, I mean, everybody knows this quote. I wish I knew who to attribute it to. I feel bad that I don't. I guess I could look it up on Google, but they're not paying us any money for that advertising. So I'm not gonna give it to them. It's the kids don't care how much you know until they know that you care. And I think for you and I, that's really like that is the underlying foundation of how we approach teaching. Would you agree with that?
Oh my gosh, yeah. Like I said, day one, I don't do content. They're not gonna care if I'm like the greatest math teacher on the planet. Like, but they do go home and they tell their friends like, yo, Freeberg told us some crazy stories and he threw tennis balls at us, you know, like he learned our name by the time we walked out his door. I don't know how he did it. And we'll do the tennis ball game another time, but that's another one of the ways I try to connect.
Yeah. I just feel like there's something about being relationship first, and you've done a really good job in the past of kind of talking about how you believe that all of your colleagues, like every teacher, right? They care about the kids, right? Like you wouldn't teach if you didn't care about students. Right. You would do something else.
Right.
But you make a good point about how easy it is to get distracted or to get off the path of being focused on those student relationships because of all the things from whether it's the district or parents or admin or just other pressures that come with the job. And so for me, I think that's one of the reasons I'm actually excited about doing the podcast is one, to help people think about new ways to stay focused on the path of being relationship first. And then also it's just going to force me to do it, right? Because if I'm talking about it on a regular basis, it'll create a really natural reminder for me to make sure that I'm maintaining that focus as well.
Right. Right. Absolutely. And I think that's one of our hopes too, out of this that we've talked about is like, if we can empower and inspire another teacher to bring this back to the building, that natural story sharing of like, yo, I heard this today, or like, this is something I want to try in my classroom, just by speaking to it, it makes us do it more. And then like by spreading that, it one, you build your team. Right. And that's always awesome. Cause it's fun to have other people hanging out with you. But two, by speaking it and sharing it, you know, we become better at the content and better at the lesson because we teach other people. which is why, you know, sometimes we try to get our students to actually teach each other, right? That peer teaching kind of.
So in talking about that idea of it being our focus, what's the center of what we're trying to do, you know, we also know that we get reminded, hopefully every year, about Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And I think one of the things that struck me as we were talking about this is that we both came across being relationship centered out of a natural, I think that was just like, I think anything that you and I would have gone into, whether it would have been, you know, life insurance sales or coaching or dog breeding, whatever, right? Like the things that we're interested in, we always would have done it from a relationship centered place. We don't do the relationship centered thing because it creates results in the classroom, but we have learned over time that, that there's a benefit that we're seeing for our student learning because of the relationships that we build. And as I was thinking about that, we were talking about Maslow's hierarchy, and you had a really good observation about the fact that we can't, by default, right, we can't start at the base of that triangle or of that pyramid because
right.
multiple factors. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I think you did a really good job too of pointing out that like when we have belongingness and we like the student feels like they belong in our classroom and they feel like they're cared about, then all of a sudden they come into our room and they're more likely to be like, yo, like you got something to eat, or like I wasn't sleeping much last night, like can I just like crash in your room literally for 10 minutes during lunch, or like you know, they start sharing some of those things that are going on at home that, like, I know in my own life, like, I'm not going to just share that with some random stranger. Like, I'm gonna keep my mask on. I'm going to show up like life is great. And then, like, my closest friends are going to know some of that stuff. So if we can create connection, we can create belongingness in our classroom, we're more likely to actually find out some of the missing parts of that lower part of the triangle. And I know for me, especially as an early teacher, like I assumed the lower level stuff is being taken care of by like somebody else on campus.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you and I have definitely talked and agreed that like we would love for our counselors to be able to have those relationships and do all that stuff. But the matter, like the experience that we actually witness is our counselors are overwhelmed with all sorts of other stuff that they've got to deal with. And so unfortunately, they don't get as much time with the students as they want. Like I've had several of those conversations where they're like, you know, we're dealing with testing, we're dealing with schedules, we're dealing with IEP meetings, we're dealing with, you know, all the other stuff that they have to deal with. It's important stuff. But my assumption as a teacher was that was what a counselor got to do, and they don't. And so, you know, I think it's become a huge benefit that, you know, I can stay in, you know, and other teachers that teach in a very similar fashion to me can show up in a way that supports a lot of those needs our counselors aren't able to take care of because they're so busy.
And or like, I know what happens with me a lot of times. I know, like to your point, right? Like a kid shares something with you and you're like, okay, that's, I'm like, thank you for sharing kind of thing. And then depending on what it is, right? Like I'm a mandatory reporter. Right. We all are. So like we might have to report something, at which point I'll just tell the kid like, hey, you didn't do anything wrong. I'm not like, nobody's upset, but like what you just told me is something that I'm required by law to report. So I'm going to pass that information on. So I want you to be aware of that. And then, in other cases, it doesn't quite rise to that level. Like I had a kid this year, just talk about insomnia that they were dealing with. And I just asked, I was like, hey, do you want me to rope in the counselor and the school psychologist? Because they've got resources for this that I, you know, I don't know how to solve insomnia. I deal with it myself sometimes. So, you know, and then that student ended up being really thankful that I connected them to those resources because, and then the counselor is excited because I gave them information they didn't have and they get to do what they love most about their job, which is connect one-on-one with a kid and help them out. So yeah, I think to the Maslow's hierarchy thing, right? We have to create the belongingness and the sense of shared care before they're going to share the things that are going to allow us to do the bottom level support.
Right. Right. And to make it a sports terminology, because this is something I always loved when you and I were coaching together, like on the defense, we talk about like linebackers need to know what the D's are doing and what the D line is doing. Like they got to go up and down. And so I think us teachers are in that role, right? Like we need to know what's happening in the foundation, in the front lines, in the battleground, right? Like the defensive line. We need to know, you know, what's going on at home. We need to be able to help fill some of those needs, but we don't know that until we've created that team and they trust us at the level above them. And then for us to go up a level, right? And we go up to all that self-actualization, our mindfulness, all that kind of stuff. Like we need to be able to have everything with us in a space where everything can happen. We can find out ways, and then we can create the base strong enough to stack the emotional supports and the needs and the belongingness. And now we can really go into some mindfulness and like harness that maximum potential out of students, which you spoke directly to. And I love that idea that we didn't do this because it creates, like we thought it was going to create better outputs in our classroom, but it 100% has happened because we focus on the student.
Yeah. And so for me, I think a really good example of that I was thinking of, something that my wife taught me, you know, she's smarter than me and obviously, because of her job, she's a social worker, knows a lot more about how to kind of deal with people who are struggling with things. And what she's helped me to figure out how to do is do a much better job of consciously acknowledging the thing that the student is saying is the reason that they need extra help for. All right. So when a student comes in and says, you know, my grandfather passed away, I need to miss school to go to the funeral. Can I have an extension on the assignment or whatever? I think similar to all the pressures of the rest of the world, kind of having us lose our focus on being relationship first, you know, you can get caught up in the grades and everything and just help the student figure out the assignment but it's important to remember to like acknowledge what the kid just said. You know, I'm sorry that you're dealing with thing X. Depending on how well you know the student, you might ask some follow-ups, right? Like if I don't know the student very well, I'm not going to ask like, did you know that she was going to die? But it might be a student like I knew that like that this was coming or something like that, where I could ask that kind of a follow-up. And then what happens, right, when they come back and they turn in the thing, you're also checking in with them again about how they're dealing with what they've gone through. And I've just seen over time in doing that, that students remember that way more than they remember anything else.
Right. Right. I don't necessarily remember all the history and stories and stuff that K-Dub taught me, but you know, I do remember that when I was in some of my worst moments, like he cared about me enough to like take care of me.
Mm-hmm.
So, for sure.
Yeah. And that kind of ropes itself into like, in terms of, you know, we are going to talk about how relationships are going to allow us and people who are using the same strategies that we are to get more out of their students. And I think a really concrete example of that is I do an end of the year survey and a beginning of the year survey. And some of the questions I ask in there are about like, you know, do you like social studies? You know, I get a lot of no's, but at the end of the year, and I've gotten better at asking more follow-up so that I can, you know, reflect and get better myself. But what I get a lot of, and it's a bit of a humble brag, so I'll just kind of do that for a second and apologize. But, you know, I get a lot of students to say, I've never liked history or I don't usually like social studies, but I really liked your class. And when I get the reasons for why they changed their opinion of the topic, there are a few kids, like I do cover some different material, right? It's not just what's in the textbook, where I'm a little bit more interactive than like your kind of stereotypical history class, right? It's not all lecture and reading. But the overwhelming majority of the feedback I get is the reason that they like my class is something to do with the relationship that I had with them and the fact that they knew that I was, that the material was secondary to the people.
Right. Right. 100%. Yeah. I could not agree more with you in that sense. Like I joke with people all the time. I'm like, yo, like, people accidentally learn math in my class. Like you were talking about how like you hate math. I'm like, that is my student. You know, like that's who right now, like I'd say 80% of my students that I have in my classes right now are not like math students. Like they don't love math. That in fact, for a lot of them, it's their least favorite. So when they show up in my classroom, like I think it would be silly for me to think like, oh, I'm going to start throwing math at you and you're all of a sudden going to love math. Like they're like, no, like I've got years of whatever negative experience they had, I don't like math, but then they show up in my room and I care about them. I tell stories, we have fun. To your point that we, do things that are a little bit more engaging, a little bit off the beaten path, connect it to some real life examples like exponential growth with YouTube videos or rumor spreading or like we were doing my house, we just were redoing the backyard and like I was trying to put crushed rock in the backyard. And of course, as a math person, I know exactly how many feet are in my backyard, 4 inches deep, 60 feet by 40 feet. I'm like, boom, this is what I need. Well, the guy's like, all right, I'll bring a dump truck. And he just drops the rock. And I'm like, not enough rock. And so then, like, I went and did the next step of like, how many dump trucks should he have brought? And he should have brought three dump trucks, And it's like, all of a sudden, my students are like, oh, I didn't even think like math would be like dump trucks, all of a sudden, like, they accidentally learn that, oh, I now know for unit conversions, which wasn't even the topic we were teaching in that moment. I told a funny story about my weekend and how somebody lost money because he didn't know how many dump trucks he was going to need to make, the amount of square footage I need or cubic feet I needed. And we're like, oh, no, understanding math like benefited me $400 because he needed to bring me more rock. And it cost him $400 because he improperly quoted it, And so all of a sudden, like that story sticks. So I think because the kids hear real life stuff, because they know I care about them, they want to be in my classroom, and then they just accidentally learn math. It's, I don't know, it's fun. Like that's my favorite, is making kids accidentally learn.
Well, another thing that you've talked about though that I think is really interesting, with like that atmosphere in your class is the fact that you're willing to be flexible when it comes to due dates and things like that. And I'm wondering, I my stereotypical vision of a math teacher in my head is that there's 14 problems that were given last night. They've got to be turned in tomorrow. I'm wondering how you've been able to get out of that cycle.
It took me a while, right? Because I was a good math student, and I followed the old school programming of do your homework and you'll do well on the test and put in the time, and if you don't put in the time then you won't get the results. And I don't know, so like I definitely struggled with it for a while, and then the more I took time to understand my students and my student situations. And a lot of this came from, doing and facilitating those workshops around the country I was telling you about, that was all social emotional learning. Like, I started to learn, like, oh my gosh, like, why would they do my homework when they don't know where their next meal is coming from? Or like, they're responsible for their siblings the 8 hours after school before like a parent comes off of a double shift or like something, right? And so I'm like, oh yeah, of course my student who's not getting enough sleep, who's eating after the rest of the family is eating, like of course they're not going to get all their homework done. Perfect. Come in, let's work, let's do four or five problems. If you can do this skill, we're in good shape. And like it just, I don't know, like I understand why there's the firm line of like, here's what's expected and here's what you need to be doing, but at the same time, like we're human. Like there's different stories. The ultimate connection piece I think is bigger than the did you do 14 problems? No, but you did six of them and you tried your hardest and you did your best with the time and resources you had available. Perfect.
Yeah,
I needed your best effort.
well, and I think what stands out to me about that story or about that explanation is it's not just that you're doing something that's helping you build a rapport with that student, but there's also the fact that you're able to meet that student where they're at because you've already developed a rapport where they're able to tell you what they're going through, right? And so I think one of the things that can be hard for teachers is we have to have some sort of, there has to be a standard, right? We can't just like wander or standard list through the wilderness. So you have to have a standard, and then students have to make the effort of letting us know that they need the standard to be adjusted for some reason. And that's why that's another reason why I think the connection piece is so important, is that when students know that they can come to you and explain what's going on and get a reasonable response, then you're going to get kids who are giving you their best, even if it's not the same quantity of what you are asking for. You're going to get the quality that you're asking for.
And I mean, we're not give every kid who tries hard an A, right? Like, that's sometimes the argument I hear from other teachers. They're like, well, you know, I can't just give them an A because they tried, but they didn't actually know the content. Well, no, that's not what we're saying. Like, help that kid pass and graduate because they actually know enough of the content. But, you know, if I get a kid who busts his tail and I can get him a 70% C instead of just forgetting about him, leaving him in the dust and letting him fail and try again, like through Apex later, yeah, I'm going to push this kid as hard as I can to get him to a C level, like, for sure. I find so much more value in that. So,
absolutely.
But yeah, I know you've talked about some of the flexibility as well. Like, what have been some of your success stories by having that connection with students and the resulting effort based on connection, and like where that has shown up as powerful in your room?
I think sometimes it's as simple, like this year. So our school right now, we're 100% remote, right? We've been that way all year. We're at least going to be that way all the way through the end of our first semester here in the end of January. As I've done things with my students, you know, I give them some choice in what they do. And like, so I, an example for this year is, I had the students do a project where they were going to go from the ancient history of a country in Africa all the way up through their modern story. And I had like a standard set of questions I wanted the kids to ask and find the answers to via their research. And I had one student whose family had a connection to Morocco, and the student is part of the LGBTQ plus community. And she wanted to focus on the history of how that community has been treated in the country that she studied, right? And so that had nothing to do with the things that we were supposed to be doing our research on, but she knew that I wanted her to pick something that she was interested in, that she was going to have fun with. So she learned a ton, right? What she gave me in terms of like what was asked for and what I got, like I got like a 25-minute video where she like did like a basically a TED talk on the treatment of LGBTQ plus people in Morocco. What I asked for was like 8 slides that had like, you know, a little bit less than a paragraph on each of them. And I got a whole recorded video instead, right? And if I had just told her, no, I need you to do the thing I asked you to, I never would have gotten that. Right. And so I got something really cool to look at out of it, and she learned way more because she was able to focus on what she was passionate about, and she knew that she could ask for that, right? And then on top of that, now she's always more engaged with what we're doing because she's always trying to find the connection to the other things that she's interested in her life in, because she knows that I'm willing to go there with her. So,
yeah, that's awesome. I love how you share that your understanding of the student and the flexibility to let them go and run with their passion results in them working harder, learning more, and producing more. Like, it's win-win-win all across. So,
yeah. And, I mean, I think the thing for everybody to remember, I mean, there are going to be times when that doesn't work out that well. Like, I've had other times, like I had another student this year, same project, they wanted to record a movie about their topic. They wanted to make a movie with their family members about it, and it didn't really work out, right? The movie was kind of choppy there, and like they had a bunch of issues that they ran into, and they weren't able to create what they wanted. But again, you know, I got an email from that student's parents before Christmas just thanking me, and they didn't thank me for anything other than letting their student do what they want, like try something and then fail without any major consequences, because the student was still able to show the learning that I cared about, right? So they tried this thing, it didn't work, no big deal.
And so next time they're gonna do it better.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. And knowing that failing is part of the learning process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the model that, and like foster that atmosphere that it's totally okay to do that. Love it. Well, I think that gets us to about where we wanted on round one here. We're gonna finish up all of our episodes because you know how we feel about stories already. And this first one, I love this story, and I think it ties into some of the laughter that can come from having these relationships with the students. I think it gives you another little snippet of how Dave and I have become like really good friends over time, and how much he and I believe in this relationship building as being the root of all things we do. This one's a sports one. We were friends with each other. I think we were either fresh out of college or maybe even still in college that year. And
I think fresh
we were
out, yeah.
coaching.
It was like the year after.
Yeah, and so we were coaching youth football, and we had a group of, gosh, they were probably 10 or 11, maybe 12, like not like
I think
middle
they
school.
were the kid in particular that you were talking about, I think was 12 or 13 at
Oh,
the
that's right.
time, right? Because there
Yeah,
was this.
like 2, 3 years. Yeah. So,
Yeah.
anyways, we're hanging out, we're working with this group of kids, and same thing we're talking about in the classrooms. Like, we were all about like finding what the true personality of all of our athletes were and letting that shine and making it them to shine in the way they were built to be, really. And so this kid, we're going to call him Johnny K for this story, but he was our quarterback. He's just a goofball. Like, kid, no matter what the situation is, like if it gets tense and you just need to like crack a joke or make that like smart comment real quick just to like remind you that life's not as serious as you just made it. Life is serious, don't get me wrong, like, but it's also good to like step back in. So Johnny was that guy that would help us. And so we're coaching, and it's like a late fall cold day. We're all huddled up, like it's one of those where you're like almost relying on each other's body heat, and like out of nowhere, been having a fairly intense practice trying to get ready for the game, and Johnny just rips like one of those juicy farts, like it's just, oh, it's like one of those like gross ones, and without missing a beat, kid looks at you with his Johnny smirk on his face, and he's like, "That's gonna itch when it dries." And it's like, just you just lose all, like, for a moment, and you're there, you're present. Like, the whole team's laughing, and like it brings you all together, and like it creates that camaraderie, and like, oh my, and it's so funny. Like, years later, that had to have been 15 years ago.
At least, yeah.
Yeah, like that was one of those where, like, now in class, if I ever have a student who accidentally or intentionally farts in class, it happens, right? Like, I'll look at his face, and because sometimes it's the first time happened in your class, right? Like, a kid's like, "Oh, how's it gonna happen?" I just look him straight in the face. I'm like, "That's gonna itch," and like, kid like is like almost embarrassed but almost relieved all at the same time. He's like, "Okay, I'm not in trouble," but like, did he really just say that? And being able to connect with the kids, allow them to be free spirits, allow them to be 100% who they are and not make them wrong, right? It's so
Yeah,
funny.
I just
And
think, I mean, like my memory of that practice is that we were getting ready for a playoff game, and I think the natural default of a lot of coaches would have been to like get angry about the distraction and to allow that to be a problem. But we'd already set an atmosphere where Johnny knew it was okay to have that moment, and where all the players knew it was okay to laugh at it for a second and then get back to business, right? That was the other thing, right? We could always get back to business.
right.
And I will not just bet you, I know for a fact that if you talk to kids from that team, they remember that incident in practice better than they remember the fact that we won the playoff game then like 2 days later, right? Like they don't even remember who we I remember who we played and what the score was. We beat Newport 21-19, but like nobody else cares about that. What they care about is that Johnny made everybody laugh for like literally practice stopped for 2 minutes because everybody was laughing. So
Right. And like the thing I remember from that is like that moment and moment similar to like is what group so close together that they didn't have to think about what they were doing. They could just know that how they were and the way they were was good. And they showed up and played to the best of their ability. And like, we didn't have like any crazy standout stars on that team that like went Division One, but that group of kids eventually built like a state championship caliber squad. Like it's amazing what like they were able to do because they believed in each other. They knew it was safe to try, fail, and grow. And so I think that like comes back full circle. Like some people are like, why is a fart? It's bigger than the fart, right? Like it's about relationship. It's about like making this a space where everything is okay, and I want you to be you so that you can be the best you can be for me. And I think when a kid knows that is true to your core, they show up in a different way, not just for us as individuals, but as a group.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things I always think about when I'm thinking about Johnny, I mean, you mentioned the smirk, right? Like anytime I think about Johnny, that's the visual I have in my face is just him with that shit-eating grin, where he's just like he's just cracked a joke of some sort, because that's just who he was. But I also remember the story of how he became our quarterback. You know, he'd wanted to be a quarterback for a while, and other coaches wouldn't let him do it because they didn't think he had the right leadership capabilities, because he is kind of a goof off and he's generally more quiet unless he's being a goof. But he's a hard worker, he was super athletic, super talented, right? All these things that were great about him. And so his dad was also super thankful. He was like, why did you let Johnny be the quarterback? And I said, well, I believe in, like, I didn't have the term at the time, so I used some other different word, salad, to answer him. But I basically now know, like, the answer is I believe in strengths, right? Like strength-based leadership. And
Right.
Johnny's strengths, it was lightening the mood, right? And so he was great for when things got tense, everybody could relax because Johnny was going to help everybody relax. And we performed better as a unit because what that team needed was to be able to relax and not play with a lot of pressure. For whatever reason, that team had a lot of kids that were kind of a little dialed and wired and like feeling a lot of pressure about playing football. And Johnny was able to bring that temperature down for everybody.
Let's bring that back to the classroom. How many times do we have kids show up that have that test anxiety and freak out? But if you've got that class atmosphere where you show up, you play some chill music, or you crack a couple jokes, and you can actually bring them back to a space where they can remember what it is you taught them, like, yeah, that's critical. Love it. Awesome. Well, thank you for hanging with me, Dave, and everybody else. Thanks for checking in and listening in. I hope you grabbed at least one nugget from us today, and we look forward to going on this journey with you and being a part of it. Please, any info you've got, try some of this. Tell us how it went. If you've got questions, post it in the YouTube channel. Send us emails directly. Things like that, and we'd love to be a part of the conversation with you. Anything else, Dave?
No, I think you hit it all there. I think the big thing is if we said something that you think you want to know a little bit more about, feel free to reach out and we're happy to share what we have.
Yes, awesome. Have an awesome day. And as I always say, make sure you guys learn in peak state.
Love it. Just have a good one, man. I stole it from another coach. Make it a great day, right? That's a choice that you can make.
Love it. All right, see you guys.
See you later.